By 1993, the internet was still just mailing lists and email and FTP sites. So I started collecting an archive of electronic music and was interested in how we could put this online and make it available to a larger audience. That was when I heard about Mosaic, the web browser developed by Marc Andreessen. So I got a job at the computer lab in the Berkeley Business School, and I spent my spare time researching Mosaic and other web technologies. That led me to a discussion board with a lot of the people who were writing the first generation of web browsers and web servers. I found myself sitting in on this forum watching Tim Berners-Lee and Marc Andreessen debating how all these things should work, recalled Bellendorf. It was pretty exciting, and it seemed radically inclusive. I didn't need a PhD or any special credentials, and I started to see some parallels between my music group and these scientists who had a common interest in building the first web software. I followed that discussion for a while, and then I told a friend of mine about it. He was one of the first employees at Wired magazine, and he said Wired would be interested in having me set up a website for them. So I joined there at $10 an hour, setting up their email and their first website, Hotwired. It was one of the first ad-supported online magazines. Hotwired decided it wanted to start by having a registration system that required passwords, a controversial concept at that time. In those days, noted Andrew Leonard, who wrote a history of Apache for Salon.com in 1997, most webmasters depended on a web server program developed at the University of Illinois' National Center for Supercomputing Applications, also the birthplace of the groundbreaking Mosaic web browser. But the NCSA web server couldn't handle password authentication on the scale that Hotwired needed. Luckily, the NCSA server was in the public domain, which meant that the source code was free to all comers. So Bellendorf exercised the hacker prerogative. He wrote some new code, a patch to the NCSA web server, that took care of the problem. Leonard commented, "He wasn't the only clever programmer rummaging through the NCSA code that winter. All across the exploding web, other webmasters were finding it necessary to take matters into their own keyboards. The original code had been left to gather virtual dust when its primary programmer, University of Illinois student Rob McCool, had been scooped up, along with Marc Andreessen and Lynx author Eric Bina, by a little-known company in Silicon Valley named Netscape. Meanwhile, the web refused to stop growing and kept creating new problems for web servers to cope with. So patches of one kind or another proliferated like band-aids on bandwidth, plugging one hole here and breaching another gap there. Meanwhile, all these patches were slowly, in an ad hoc open source manner, building a new, modern web server. But everyone had his or her own version, trading patches here and there, because the NCSA lab couldn't keep up with it all. I was just this near dropout, explained Bellendorf. I was having a lot of fun building this website for Wired and learning more than I was learning at Berkeley. So a discussion started in our little working group that the NCSA people were not answering our emails. We were sending in patches for the system, and they weren't responding. And we said, if NCSA would not respond to our patches, what's going to happen in the future? We were happy to continue improving this thing, yet we were worried when we were not getting any feedback and seeing our patches integrated. So I started to contact the other people I knew trading patches. Most of them were on the standards working groups, the Internet Engineering Task Force, that were setting the first standards for the interconnectivity between machines and applications on the Internet. And we said, why don't we take our future into our own hands and release our own web server version that incorporated all our patches? We looked up the copyright for the NCSA code, and it basically just said, give us credit at Illinois for what we invented if you improve it, and don't blame us if it breaks, recalled Bellendorf. So we started building our own version from all our patches. None of us had time to be a full-time web server developer, but we thought if we could combine our time and do it in a public way, we could create something better than we could buy off the shelf, and nothing was available then anyway. This was all before Netscape had shipped its first commercial web server. That was the beginning of the Apache project. By February 1999, they had completely rewritten the original NCSA program and formalized their cooperation under the name Apache. So in many ways, Behlendorf and his open-source colleagues, most of whom he had never met but knew only by email through their open-source chat room, had created a virtual, online, bottom-up software factory which no one owned and no one supervised. We had a software project, but the coordination and direction were an emergent behavior based on whoever showed up and wanted to write code, he said. But how does it actually work? I asked Behlendorf. You can't just have a bunch of people unmonitored throwing code together, can you? Most software development involves a source code repository and is managed by tools such as the concurrent version system, he explained. So there is a CVS server out there, and I have a CVS program on my computer. It allows me to connect to the server and pull down a copy of the code so I can start working with it and making modifications. If I think my patch is something I want to share with others, I run a program called Patch, which allows me to create a new file, a compact collection of all the changes. That is called a patch file, and I can give that file to someone else, and they can apply it to their copy of the code to see what impact that patch has. If I have the right privileges to the server, which is restricted to a tightly controlled oversight board, I can then take my patch and commit it to the repository, and it will become part of the source code. The CVS server keeps track of everything and who sent in what. So you might have read access to the repository, but not commit access to change things. When someone makes a commit to the repository, that patch file gets emailed out to all the other developers, so you get this peer review system after the fact. And if there is something wrong, you fix the bug.